Welcome to Zichur Daf Simanim. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldar, and today we're at Sechur Shabbos, Daf Kuf Beis. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, the final mission of the Perek states that if one threw an object and then remembered it was Shabbos after it left his hand, but before it landed, and another person caught it, or a dog caught it, or it got burned before it landed, he's patur from bringing a chatas. Similarly, if one threw an object with the intent to injure a person or an animal, which he would then be liable for causing a bruise on Shabbos, and then remembered it was Shabbos after it left his hand, he is patur. The Mishnah concludes with a klal: Kol chay vechatas ein chayavin ad shetehitchilas v'sof mishkaga. All who are liable for chatas are not liable unless the beginning and the completion of their action was done b'shogeg. Point number two: this machlokas is a rhyme in a case where one transports an object 2 amas b'shogeg, then 2 amas b'mezid, and then 2 amas b'shogeg. Rabba says he's pater, whereas Rabba says he's chayav. Rabba says he's pater, and even according to Rabban Gamliel, who holds ein yadil achetzi shir, there's no awareness for a half measure, and therefore 2 half measures combine to make one chayav. Rabban Gamliel only applies this principle in a case where one wrote 1 letter b'shogeg, became aware of a sin, and then wrote a 2nd letter b'shogeg. Since the 2nd letter was also written b'shogeg, Rabban Gamliel holds he's liable. But in our case, the person is completing the Dalet Amos b'mezid, and therefore he's not liable for a chatas. Rabba says the case is where the person threw the object, and even the Rabbanan who hold of Yesh Yadil Chetzi Shir would say he is liable. In the case of writing, the writer was in control of choosing to write the 2nd letter. Therefore, his forgetting that it's Shabbos renders the writing a separate act, and the 2 writings do not combine to make him chayev. Here, however, in the case of throwing the object, he's no longer in control of retrieving the object, and therefore the entire transfer is regarded as 1 act, b'shogeg. And point number 3, the opening mission of the Perek HaBona states that one is liable for the malacha of bona, for building, if he builds even a minimal amount, a kol shehu. The Gemara asks, what practical use is building a kol shehu, a minimal amount? And after rejecting 2 answers, concludes with the opinion of Achabar Yaakov, who said that someone with a large home who has a hole in the wall will seal it with clay. A similar thing was done in the construction of the Mishkan when a craftsman would pour molten lead into a small hole in a beam that a worm had bored. So once again, the 3 topics are: number 1, the final mission of the Perek states that if one threw an object and then remembered it was Shabbos after it left his hand, but before it landed, and another person caught it, or a dog caught it, or it got burned before it landed, he's patur from bringing a chatas. Similarly, if one threw an object with the intent to injure a person or an animal, which would make him liable for causing a bruise on Shabbos, and then remembered it was Shabbos after it left his hand, he is patur. The mission concludes with a klal: Kol chay v'chatas ein chayavin ad shetehitchilasan v'sof mishkaga. All who are liable for a chatas are not liable unless the beginning and the completion of their action was done b'shogeg. Point number 2: there's a malchokas and marayim in a case where one transports an object 2 amas b'shogeg, then 2 amas b'mezid, and then 2 amas b'shogeg. Rabba says he's patur, whereas Rabba says he's chayav. Rabba says he's patur, and even according to Rabban Gamliel, who holds ein yadil chetzi shir, there's no awareness for a half measure, and therefore 2 half measures combine to make one chayev. Rabban Gamliel applies this principle only in a case where one wrote a letter b'shogeg, became aware of a sin, and then wrote a 2nd letter b'shogeg. Since the 2nd letter was also written b'shogeg, Rabban Gamliel holds he's liable. In our case, though, the person is completing the 4 amos b'mezid, and therefore he's not liable for a chatas. Rabba says the case is where the person threw the object, and even the Rabbanan who hold of Yesh Yadil Chetzi Shir would say he is liable here. In the case of the writing, the writer was in control of choosing to write the 2nd letter. Therefore, his forgetting that it's Shabbos renders the writing a separate act, and the 2 writings do not combine to make him chayev. Here, however, in the case of throwing the object, he's no longer in control of retrieving the object, and therefore the entire transfer is regarded as 1 act b'shogeg. And point number 3, the opening mission of the Perek HaBona states that one is liable for the malacha bona, for building, if he builds even a kol shehu, even a minimal amount. The Gemara asks, what practical use is building a kol shehu, a minimal amount? And after rejecting 2 answers, concludes with the opinion of Rav Achim Bar Yaakov, who said that someone with a large home who has a hole in the wall will seal it with clay. A similar thing was done in the construction of the Mishkan when a craftsman would pour molten lead into a small hole in a beam that a worm had bored. All right, so now we go to our Sefer Kuf Beis, and there are a lot of people suggested corn on the cob, COVID-19, a cubby, a cave was very popular, kebabs, cover the measurement, a bottle of Cabernet wine from David Levine from Toronto, a cupboard, Cubs, the Chicago Cubs, We had Rubik's Cube, and a loan letter from Kiryat suggested a Rubik's Cube record holder, which is very clever. But I'm going to go through the suggestion that came from Moshe Raps from Yerushalayim, Yisrael Olsberg from Rabat Meir Shemesh, and Nathaniel Jacob from Great Neck, New York, who suggested a caveman. So we're going to use a caveman for Kuf Beis. So thank you very much, Moshe, Yisrael, and Nathaniel for caveman. So here goes. The caveman, who remembered it was Shabbos after he threw his ball of clay, carried it back to the cave, two amas b'shogeg, two amas b'mezid, and two amas b'shogeg, to seal a small hole in his wall. Once again, it's a motion. The caveman, that must mean we're on Daf Kuf Beis. The caveman who remembered it was Shabbos after he threw his ball of clay, which reminds us, the final mission in the Perek states that if one threw an object and then remembered it was Shabbos after he left his hand, but before it landed, and another person caught it, or a case where a dog caught it, or it got burned before it landed, he's punted from bringing a katas. Similarly, if one threw an object with the intent to injure a person or an animal, which he would then be liable for causing a bruise on Shabbos, and then remembered it was Shabbos after he left his hand, he is putted. The mission concludes with a klal, Kol chai v'chatzes ein chayavin, ashtehei tchilasim v'sofim v'shkaga. All who are liable for chatzes are not liable unless the beginning and the completion of their action was done b'shogeg. So the caveman remembered it was Shabbos after he threw his ball of clay, carried it back to the cave, two amas b'shogeg, two amas b'mezid, and two amas b'shogeg, which reminds us, there's malchokas amarim in a case where one transports an object, two amas b'shogeg, two amas b'mezid, and two amas b'shogeg. Rava says he's pater, whereas Rava says he's chayev. Rava says he's pater, and even according to Rav Gamliel, who holds ein yadil chetzi shir, there is no awareness for a half measure, and therefore two half measures combine to make one chayev. This principle only applies according to Rav Gamliel in a case where one wrote one letter b'shogeg, became aware of his sin, and then wrote a second letter b'shogeg. Since the second letter was also written b'shogeg, Rav Gamliel holds he is liable. In our case, though, the person is completing the four amos b'mezid, and therefore he's not liable for achatas. Rava says the cases where the person threw the object, and even the Rabbanan hold of Yesh Yadil Chetzi Shir would say in this case he's liable. In the case of writing, the writer was in control of choosing to write the second letter. Therefore, his forgetting that it's Shabbos renders the writing a separate act, and the two writings do not combine to make him chayev. Here, however, in the case of throwing the object, he's no longer in control of retrieving the object, and therefore the entire transfer is regarded as one act b'shogeg. So the caveman remembered it was Shabbos after he threw his ball of clay, carried it back to the cave, two amas b'shogeg, two amas b'mezid, and two amas b'shogeg, to seal a small hole in his wall. Which reminds us, the opening mission of the Perek of Abona states that one is liable for the malach of Bona for building if he builds even a kolshu, even a minimal amount. The Gemara asks, what practical use is building a kolshu, a minimal amount? And after rejecting two answers, concludes with the opinion of Rav Akiva bar Yaakov, who said that someone with a large home who has a hole in the wall will seal it with clay. A similar thing was done in the construction of the Mishkan when a craftsman would pour molten lead into a small hole in a beam that a worm had bored. So once again, the caveman who remembered it was Shabbos after he threw his ball of clay, carried it back to the cave, two amas b'shogeg, two amas b'mezid, and two amas b'shogeg, to seal a small hole in his wall. All right, so now it's time for a four blah ba chazara. Daf Tzadiches. So the symbol Tzadiches is a clown. So here goes. The circus clown, that means we're on Daf Tzadiches. The circus clown threw his red clown nose, Dalet Amos, through two Rishus of Rabbim, which reminds us. It was taught in a Brisa that if one throws an object from one Rishus of Rabbim to another Rishus of Rabbim, and there's a Rishus Yachi between them, if the object traveled Dalet Amos through the Rishus of Rabbim, he is liable. If it traveled less than Dalet Amos, he's Pater. The Gemara says the Tana is coming to teach that Rishuyos Mitzdarfos, two identical domains combined for one to be liable for Hotzah, meaning even if it flew two Amos in one Rishus of Rabbim and two Amos in the second Rishus of Rabbim. Additionally, we see from here that we don't say that something contained in the airspace of a Rishus is legally viewed as if it had come to rest it, because if indeed we view it as if it had landed, the thrower would have been liable even if it traveled less than Dalet Amos, because he transferred it from the Rishus of Rabbim into the Rishus of Yachid. So the circus clown threw his red clown nose Dalet Amos to two Rishus of Rabbim, and it ended up under the open space of a wagon, which reminds us, it was said in the name of Rav, that one who transfers an object, Dalet Amos, in a roof to Rishus of Rabbim, is Pater, because a roof to Rishus of Rabbim does not resemble the encampment in the desert, which is where we learn out the Malach of Hotzah. The Gemara questions this ruling, since the wagons in the desert, which were used to carry the crushing, the beams, were considered roof because of the crushing, bohes on them. And Rav said in the name of Rebbe Chia that the areas beneath the wagons, between them and the area to the sides, had the status of Rishus of Rabbim. How could the area beneath have the status of Rishus of Rabbim if the wagons were roofed? So the Gemara clarifies that the area beneath the wagons, five amas in length, is referring to nearly one amma gap of open space in the middle of the wagon. When two stacks of crushing were placed at the front of the wagon, and two stacks of crushing were placed at the rear, with each stack being an amma in width. So the circus clown threw his red clown nose dal de amos to two rishus of rabbims, and it ended up under the open space of a wagon carrying beams that were tapered at the end. Which reminds us, a braisa introduces Malchukas Tanaim regarding the shape of the crushing. Rav Yehuda says that they were an amma thick below at the base, but above they gradually tapered until the tips were as thin as a finger. Based on one pasuk that states, Yutamim Arosha, they should be tamim at its top. And another pasuk regarding the waters of the Yarden that states, Tamim Nikrasu, they were cut off. Rav Nechemia says the crushing were an amma thick below at the base as well as on top, based on the pasuk Yachtav. Together, Rashi explains that this word Yachtav implies that they were uniform throughout. Daf study test. So the symbol for the study test is a cheetah. So here goes. The cheetah, that means we're on Daf study test. The cheetah that escaped from the zoo jumped over two spaced out wagons in Rishus of Rabbim, which reminds us. Abai said that the space between one agala, one wagon, and the agala beside it, equaled the length of an agala, which was 5 amos. Therefore, the total space occupied by the two agalas and the space between them was 15 amos. The Gemara asks, why then is it an established principle that a Rishus of Rabbim is 16 amos? And answers that the extra amma width on the road traveled by the agalos was where a levy would stand, so that if one of the crushing began to slide off, he could set it right. So the cheetah that escaped from the zoo jumped over two spaced out wagons in Rishus Rabbim and landed in a thin walled Rishus Yachid, which reminds us. Rabbi Yochanan asks what the law is in a case where there's a wall in Rishus Rabbim that is 10 tefachim high, but not 4 tefachim wide, and it surrounds a karmelis, thereby making the karmelis a Rishus Yachid. And someone standing in Rishus Rabbim threw an object and it landed on top of the wall. Do we say that since the wall is not 4 tefachim wide, the top of the wall is makom patur, and the person is exempt? Or do we say that since the wall made the karmelis a Rishus Yachid, it's as though the enclosed area is filled to the top of the wall, making the top of the wall a mere extension of the fourth tefachim surface, so to speak, adjacent to it on the inside, and therefore the thrower is liable? Ula answered and said that if the wall forms a partition for other areas, all the more so will do it for itself as well. Therefore, the thrower would be liable for throwing it on top of the wall. So the cheetah that escaped from the zoo jumped over two spaced out wagons in Rishus Rabbim and landed in a thin-walled Rishus Yachid, kicking up dirt that landed in a pit 10 tefachim deep. Which reminds us, Rabbi Yochanan asks what the law is in a case where someone in Rishus Rabbim threw dirt into a 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide pit, which has the status of Rishus Yachid, and by throwing the dirt into it, he reduced the depth of the pit to less than 10 tefachim, thereby making it having less than the necessary measurement to be a Rishus Yachid. Do we view it as if the earth were thrown into a Rishus Yachid or not? According to Rashi, Rabbi Yochanan wants to know if the negation of the pit status as a Rishus Yachid at the moment the earth comes to rest in the pit exempts the thrower. The Gemara attempts to resolve Rabbi Yochanan's question, but is not successful. Dav Kuf. So the symbol for Dav Kuf is a monkey. So here goes. The curious monkey, that means we're on Dav Kuf. The curious monkey threw his banana towards a pit filled with water, not fruit, which reminds us. Abai said that if there was a pit in Rishus Rabbim that was 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide, meaning it's a Rishus Yachid, and it's full of water, and someone threw an object into it, he's chayev. However, if it was full of produce, he is pater. The Gemara explains that the water in the pit does not nullify its mechitzas, its partitions, whereas the fruit does. And Rashi explains that in the case of the fruit, it's as if the pit is filled to its top with earth. So the curious monkey threw his banana towards a pit filled with water, not fruit. When a strong wind blew it back out to sea, which reminds us, the Mishnah states that if one was standing in Rishus Rabbim, he threw an object within 4 amos, but it was propelled by the wind to a point beyond 4 amos, he's putter. If he threw the object beyond 4 amos, and the wind blew it back to within 4 amos, he's chayev. The Gemara asks how the thrower in the second case can be liable if the object never came to rest outside of Dalet Amos. Rabbi Yochanan answers that it rested briefly, and a braisa supports Rabbi Yochanan and states that one would be liable even if the wind held the object in mid-air for a moment, provided the object was within 3 tefachim of the ground, where the principle of chavud is operative. So the curious monkey threw his banana towards a pit filled with water, not fruit, when a strong wind blew it back and out to sea, where a ship was drawing water on board with a bucket. Which reminds us, there's a machlokes amoraim regarding how one may draw water from the sea on board a ship on Shabbos. Rav Huna said that one may extend a small rod from the ship and fill a bucket of water and bring it on board. Rav Chisda and Rav Abba Rav Huna said that one may make an enclosed area for tefachim over the water and fill the bucket through that area. And the Gemara explains that according to Rav Huna, the 10 tefachim height of a karmelis at sea is measured from the floor of the sea. Therefore, the part of the sea that is above those 10 tefachim is a makom patur. It's therefore permitted to draw water from the sea into the boat, which is a rishus or yachid. The rod only serves as a heker, as a reminder that it's forbidden to transfer from a karmus to a rishus or yachid. According to Rav Chisson, Rabbi Rav Huna, the tenth falchim of a karmus is measured from the water's surface, and therefore if one would draw water from the sea to the boat, he's bringing water from a karmus to a rishus or yachid, which is forbidden. Consequently, water needs to be drawn through a four talking wide enclosed area. Daf Kufalf. So the sim for Kufalf is a bird caller going caw, caw. So here goes. The bird caller who could only carry his cawing raven. Bird caller and a cawing raven, that means we're on Daf Kufalf. The bird caller could only carry his cawing raven Dalad Amos in the small boat from Meishan, which reminds us, Rav Huna said that in the small boats of Meishan, which was a small river that only small boats could go on, one may only carry Dalad Amos because they have the status of a karmelis. These boats were wide at the top but narrowed to a point like a canoe at the bottom, and since the bottom was not four tefachim wide, its walls lose their status as legal partitions, as mechitzos, and the walls above are considered a mechitza tzuya, a suspended wall, which is not considered a legal partition. Therefore, the boat is considered a karmelis and not a rishus yachid. Rav Huna continues that the boat would have the status of a rishus yachid if the four tefachim width of the walls was within three tefachim of the bottom of the boat, which would raise the base of the ship through the principle of lavud. Alternatively, says Rav Huna, one could fill the base of his boat with reeds and willow branches until the point where the boat widens to four tefachim. So the bird caller, who could only carry his cawing raven Dalad Amos in the small boat's formation, failed to turn it into a rishus yachid by extending its walls downwards, which reminds Rav Nachman challenged Rav Huna, suggesting that the principle of good achiz mechitzasa, extending the walls downward, should apply, which legally extends the walls of the boat down to the ground below so that they are not legally considered suspended. Since the top of the boat's width is four tefachim wide, the principle of good achiz would extend the walls down at that width, giving the boat a status of a rishus yachid and not a karmelis. So the bird caller could only carry his cawing raven Dalad Amos in the small boats from Meisham, failed to turn it into rishus yachid by extending its walls downwards, so he made an eruv together with another boat. Which reminds us, Rasafa clarifies that in the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Amud Beis that stated that it's permitted to carry between ships that are tied together was referring to a case where the ships have different owners, and the Mishnah is coming to teach that it's permitted to make an eruv. The Gemara brings a braisa to support Rav Safa that states that in the case of two ships tied together, their owners may make an eruv and carry between the boats. If the boats were to be separated, then the eruv would be negated. If they are once again tied together, whether inadvertently, deliberately, unwillingly, or accidentally, then the eruv is automatically reestablished and it is permitted to carry between them. All right, now it's time for our pop quiz of 10 questions plus 3 bonus questions from a second's brachas. Here we go. Number 1. Which daf do you learn that the open gap in the agalas had the din of rishus harabim? That's on daf tzadiches. Good. Number 2. Which daf do you learn that one can make an eruv with two ships that have different owners? That's on daf kufalof. Good. Number 3. Which daf do we have the mission that teaches that hoshat v'zvik will learn from putting the krashim on the agalas? That's on daf tzadivav. Good. Number 4. Which daf do we have the mission that teaches the call that one is only chai v'chates if tchilasim v'sofam b'shkaga? That's on daf kuf beis. Good. Number 5. Which daf do we learn that one can remove a partially detached fingernail if it's hurting him? That's on daf tzadidalot. Good. Number 6. Which daf do we learn the difference between a pit filled with water versus one with produce? That's on daf kuf. Good. Number 7. Which daf we have a case where one carries something, two amas b'shogeg, two amas memezi, and then two amas b'shogeg? That's on daf kuf beis. Good. Number 8. Which daf do we discuss what the din is if one threw something 4 amos when he intended to throw it 8 amos? That's on daf tzadizayin. Good. Number 9. Which daf we have a mochokas regarding how to draw water onto a ship? That's on daf kuf. Good. And finally, number 10, which daf do we learn that the source for the Malach V'Hutzah comes from the donations for the Mishkan? That's on daf tzadivav. Good. Now the 3 bonus questions of Maseches Brachas. Number 1, which daf do we learn the value of greeting a melech, even a non-Jewish melech? That's on daf tes. Good. Number 2, which daf do we learn that one should not call Avraham Avram? That's on daf Yud Gimel. Good. And finally, question number 3. Which daf do we have in Chokas regarding how many bread eaters are required to make a zimun with 10? That's on daf Memches. Excellent. All right, that concludes our pop quiz, plus the three bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldar from Zichru, wishing you a great day and great learning.